Welcome to the Dreamcatcher Podcast, a place where you'll receive a boost of inspiration, practical advice, and tools to maximize your success and personal happiness. And that's not all. You'll also get plenty of guidance on how you can use your gifts, talents, and compassion to contribute towards making the world a better place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a preview of what's in store and to also receive a free ebook. To sign up, simply visit www.thedreamcatch.com. Now it's my pleasure to introduce you to the host of the Dreamcatcher podcast, Celine Chinoy.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to a Dreamcatcher interview podcast special. According to my guest today, our homes are the one place on earth that we are most energetically connected to. It nourishes and supports us and will always mirror us. That's why we need to be mindful caretakers of our environment. Feng Shui, the study of the movement of qi, which is the Chinese word for energy, guides that energy, letting it flow freely through our homes, creating a healthy balance and sense of well-being. Kim Klein shares this advice and lots more in this episode. Along with being a holistic health coach, Kim is a certified feng shui consultant who graduated in 2004 from the three-year BTB, also known as a Black Tantric Buddhist Master's Training Program in San Francisco. During our conversation, Kim introduces us to the ancient science of feng shui by describing how it works and how we can benefit from using its wisdom to correct the flow of energy into and through our space. She provides some simple tools and techniques that we can use in our homes and office spaces and how we can use feng shui to set our intentions for the new year. Hi, Kim. How are you doing?
Hi, Celine. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. I'm so excited to be speaking with you today about some very interesting topics and hearing your thoughts on how we can create more abundance in our life.
I really appreciate you having me on today. Thank you so much.
Great. So let's get started, shall we?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, so I've had a chance to read your story about what led you to becoming a holistic health coach, and I found it very inspiring and relatable. But at what point in your life were you drawn to using those experiences to help others who are facing the same issues as you did?
Well, I think that is... After I attended IIN, which is the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, and I learned so much. Their philosophy is basically bio-individuality, meaning that what works for me might not work for you. And that was a real relief for me because when I was younger and I was having, I mentioned earlier that I had had weight issues and I struggled with that for a long time. And I always heard the old, well, calories in, calories out. And nowadays they look at it different. They realize that what the nutrients in food, are totally different. So 100 calories of sugar versus say 100 calories of a banana are definitely going to be used differently by our bodies. So when I learned all this, it was like, I need to share this with other people who are still, you know, struggling and just help others with the issues that I've been through. And so that's basically once I finished school.
Right. And what about the feng shui? Because that's also something that you specialized in, right?
Yeah, well, feng shui actually came first. I grew up in the Marshall Islands, or I lived in the Marshall Islands as a teenager, and I was exposed to a lot of different cultures, and I was always fascinated with anything Asian, basically. So I found out about feng shui and I was always fascinated with it. And I went to school in San Francisco back in 1999 with BTB feng shui and became a certified practitioner. And working with people's environment was a wonderful thing. And it still is a wonderful thing. But then I thought, what they call qi is the Chinese word for energy. And so when you work with the energy of an environment, and I thought, well, it would be good to work with the energy of a person as well, combine those two. And so it made for a much more holistic approach to health and more round, well-rounded, touching out on all areas of our lives. So that was when I combined the two.
Right. Did you have some kind of experience in your life that exposed you to this and made you build an interest about the topic?
In feng shui?
Yeah.
I didn't really have an experience. Personally, I had just heard about it, and I had heard about all the benefits and how important it was to be in alignment with your, you know, your home or your work environment. And so I was just really more or less fascinated by it. And I started looking into having a feng shui consultation for myself personally. And when I did find a few practitioners in San Francisco, they were quite expensive. And then I found out about a school that was they had at that time. There was one in San Francisco and one in New York. And I thought, I'm just going to go to school. I really am fascinated by this, and I just wanted to learn about it.
Okay, so it was more, you were just curious about it, and you decided to explore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Now, I know you just briefly spoke about a couple of concepts about feng shui, but let's dive deeper into it because it is a fascinating topic. Wikipedia defines feng shui as a pseudoscience originating from China, which claims to use energy forces to harmonize individuals with their surrounding environment. I'm just quoting Wikipedia right now.
Mm-hmm.
Could you explain what feng shui is in your own words and what exactly the practice involves?
Yes. Well, feng shui, the two words, when you translate them into English, is wind and water. And basically, to me, that practice is based on a philosophy that our home or our environment, work environment, wherever we spend a lot of time, is a reflection of what's going on in our lives. So it mirrors us. If you have a feng shui practitioner, a very experienced one, for example, one of my teachers, Edgar Sung, who was one of the founders of bringing BTD school here, he could walk into your home without asking any questions. And just by the way he could tell by what you had in your house, the way things were placed, if the house was in disrepair, if there was clutter, whatever was going on, he could tell what issues you might be facing in your life, which is, you know, pretty amazing. But, you know, the purpose of feng shui is to bring your home into alignment with who you are and what you want out of your life. So basically it's to balance and harmonize the energy of the home and the people who live there. And we use a lot of different things where a feng shui practitioner will do this, working with the flow of qi, the flow of energy through your home. So qi energy moves like water. It can move really fast, like a rushing river. It can, you know, kind of slowly around curves. It can be energized by fast, you know, traffic or people walking. So we try and control the flow of qi. And that can be done by removing the clutter, making sure your spaces are open, there's no blockages, things like that. And so we use color. We use living energy like plants, animals, things like that, lighting, furniture, item placement, the five elements that are like from Chinese medicine. We balance those: wood, water, metal, earth, and fire. And we balance the yin yang, the feminine and masculine qualities of objects in a room. So basically, feng shui just helps you guide this energy and lets it flow through the home, creating a really healthy, good balance and a sense of well-being in your home.
Wow. I know that there's something similar in the Indian culture. It's called Vastu Shastra. I'm Indian by ethnicity, so I've heard my relatives talk about it a lot. Is there any similarity between the two sciences?
I think so. I think most cultures have. It's really what it comes down to is geomancy, like the study of the earth's energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so every culture has their own, and feng shui just happens to be the most popular and well-known in the Western world. So, but every culture basically has, you know, their own school of thought of that and utilizes it.
Really interesting. I recently watched an interview of Maya Angelou, and she kind of touched on this topic of how objects and people's presence kind of affects the energy in an environment. And in her case, it was her home. She said that words are things and that they can get into your wallpaper, your rugs, your upholstery, mm-hmm. your clothes, and finally into you. And for that reason, she never let anyone use any profanity or insult anybody in her home. So do you think that there's some truth to that? Do you think that, you know, the kind of people who are in your home or like even clutter, you know, anything that can add like negative energy into your home environment, can that have a bad effect on your environment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, in feng shui, everything is considered alive with an energy, even if it's an inanimate object, because of the emotions that you associate with it. So, for example, even furniture can have a good energy or a bad energy depending on your feelings towards it. And, you know, that Maya Angelou, I know that about her, and that's really amazing, but she believed, and it is true with feng shui, that between us, the space between us was filled with sound and images. So even if you had a violent television program on in the room, that these violent images that were filling your space or the sounds of gunfire or whatever it might be, were affecting the space around you. And, she only wanted her space to be filled with positive energy and positive chi. So negative words or violent actions or anything in a home can very much stay in that home and permeate everything around it. There's something also known in feng shui as predecessor qi, which is the energy of the people who lived in a space before you. So it's very important that you know, especially if you're buying a home or something like that, to know, find out the history, like who lived there before you. Did they fight? Did they argue? Was there violent behavior going on there? Did they go bankrupt? Were they divorced? It all affects that space. And when you move in, you sort of inherit some of this energy that was left behind. So the same goes for positive things. If a family lived there that was, you know, a happy family, good things happened, they moved on because they had a promotion or got a better house or did something, that's a really good energy to move into. So the qi, the energy that is affected right now by what goes on, but it also is affected by past energy as well.
You know, just as you were talking, I was wondering, does this apply to public places as well? Like, you know, a hotel, for instance, or, you know, just any other public area. Like, because sometimes you enter a space and you get these feelings, right? Especially for those who are very sensitive and intuitive, you get a certain sense of the energy in that place.
Right. Yeah, there's certain places, whether it's a business or someone's a friend's home or places that you walk in and they just feel really good. And you can just, you know, you want to just stay there all afternoon. And there's other places, the minute you're in there, it's like, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
But technically, if you're not in an environment for a long period of time, it's not going to really affect you long term. It's just going to affect you immediately there, you know, that feeling you get. But to have like that negative chi or something from the past affect you, it usually have to be there quite a while and live there.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You definitely can feel it.
Yeah, you can feel it because I have some time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
You know, I've actually had a feng shui expert visit my house a couple of years ago, and she actually exposed me to some of the concepts that you mentioned, and she offered me some great tips, and I can definitely say that it instigated some really positive shifts in my life. For those who haven't had a consultation as I did, could you share some of the common benefits that they can expect from a feng shui consultation?
Yeah, well, you know, what I love about feng shui, Celine, is really the awareness that it gives people. It really helps them stay present, look at their lives and all the areas of their lives, and then work to balance them. Usually by the time someone comes to me for a consultation, they have an issue at hand. You know, either they're having financial problems or relationship or health. I mean, there's usually something specific that brings them to you instead of just an overall checkup, you know, like I just, you know, want to make sure everything's good. But so depending on what they're dealing with, we work with whatever area of the home is, because there's what's called the Bagua, which is like an energy map. It looks like a tic-tac-toe board. It's divided into 9 segments. And a life area falls into all of those. So we overlay that on a floor plan. And then we can see, oh, this is your relationship area. Let's see what you've got going on here in the home. And we can kind of determine where there might be some issues. Maybe there's too much clutter. Maybe there's, you know, sloped ceilings or cracked windows or, you know, the wrong colors or too dark, or it needs some life to it, needs some living energy, something like that. So then we just work around that. But we do that. And I try to work with people on just an issue or two so they can see results before. If you work with everything, sometimes it's hard to notice change. It's like there's just, you just did too much, so you don't really even pay attention. But if you work on, I tell people pick 2 or 3 issues that they really want to work on, and then we work with those issues. So it can, you know, can help. It can help in every area of your life by, you know, getting new good energy in there and having, I think, too, your intention gets set to improve things. And that's what's really powerful about feng shui. It's also constantly changing. So you might work today on your relationship and everything's good, but 2 years down the road, you might have to relook at that. Maybe things aren't going so well. So you go back and you work on the feng shui again of your home. Or, you know, you check, you have to keep up with it. It's not something you don't have a feng shui consultation once and you're done.
Yeah. The energy keeps shifting, right? So.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, I have a question. There are some stores, like, you know, in a Chinatown or something, that sell all these objects. For instance, they're like frogs with like a coin in their mouth, and there are like right. the box for love, for attracting more love into your life. So do you usually recommend these objects to your clients?
I only recommend them if it means something to you, to the person.
Right.
Because all of that really is superstition, and there is a little bit of superstition in feng shui, along with, you know, part, you know, the I Ching or Tai Chi,
right.
or folklore. There's lots of that.
Yeah, but like the laughing Buddha,
and, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And so if you were Chinese, for example, that frog might have a lot of significance to you.
Right.
But you, there might be something else that's much more powerful for you and resonates with you. So I always work just with, you know, who my client is, what their culture is, what their beliefs are. And because the one time I did, I remember, it was quite a while ago, but there it was a client who had like a beastie kind of sculpture at his front door. And it was kind of not a pleasant looking animal. Mm-hmm. And from my training, I said, you know, you really should remove that to another space, because it's not inviting. It's keeping opportunity away and people away. And the culture that he was from, it was a very powerful protector, and it meant a lot to him. So, you know, I'm not quick to suggest those types of changes.
Sure, that makes sense. Yeah, like for me, I when I was in Norway, I found this sculpture of this goddess called Freya, and she's like the mm-hmm. she's like the goddess, the Norse goddess of like wisdom and academia, and I instantly felt connected to it, and I bought it, and now it's in my room on my desk. So, you know, I think picking up objects where you feel it has meaning to you and it can be a source of guidance.
Yes.
That would be
right.
better, right? That's what you're saying.
Exactly. And that specific one you're talking about, like a feng shui practitioner might tell you, oh, that would be great to keep in your knowledge area, where that encourages, you know, knowledge, education, that type of thing, wisdom, or to put it in your helpful people area, which is mentors, people who guide you. So that's more about, you know, having things in the right place. Is feng shui looks at that a lot. So, you know, it's called the art of placement. So it's having these things and knowing where to put them is important in feng shui.
And how do we find out, you know, which area of our room or house represents what area of our life? Is there any resources that you suggest?
There's a lot of books, and the thing is, there's a lot of different schools of feng shui. So that's where you have to be important. You have to be aware, if you start looking at different books, you might get different information. So you follow one school or the other. There's the compass school, which uses the actual compass and the cardinal directions to figure out, where your house is located, things like that. There's the BTB school, which is where I went to school, and that's the more westernized version where they use the front door as the, what they call the mouth of chi, where all energy enters, or the main energy enters. And then you lay this bagua, this tic-tac-toe board type looking thing on your floor plan. And if you have a pretty simple home, square or rectangle, not too many extensions or things like that, it's really simple to do. And you get a good idea. But just look up bagua placement on floor plan and you can probably figure it out. But my suggestion to you would be from the BTB school, which would be different from what a compass school might tell you.
The BCB, how do you spell that?
It's B as in boy. It stands for Black Tantric Buddhist.
Oh, BCB. So it's like the acronym. Mm-hmm. BCB. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Thank you. So New Year's Eve around the corner, a lot of people are thinking about, setting those intentions and making resolutions for the year ahead. So I think it is timely for us to have a discussion about how we can go about using intentions in feng shui and why it's important. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. And that's because there's a big difference between making a resolution and making an intention. And so when New Year's Eve rolls around, everyone wants to make New Year's resolutions because they're fun. It's fun to do that. But a lot of times they don't have a lot of intention put behind them. So when we set our annual New Year's Eve, our New Year's resolutions, a lot of times they're just a repeat of last year's. Like, again, we're going to I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to quit smoking. I'm going to make more money. I'm going to get more exercise, things like that. And the problem with doing that is it usually is just focusing on negative areas in our life that we feel we have shortcomings or where we failed before.
Yeah, we need to that's where we need to fix it.
Yeah.
That's the kind of mentality. Yeah.
Right. And when we focus on it as a negative, it usually brings more of the same. So, Wayne Dyer and all the sages, all the people, our thoughts become our reality.
Right.
So when we focus on something and we commit to it, we're clear about what we want. That's kind of when we're working with an intention. So according to Grandmaster Lin Yun, who was the BTB School of Feng Shui's founder, brought it here to the U.S., he says that intention is the most important factor to anything that we do, having this intention. And what it is, a really strong desire for something, visualizing what we want and expecting it as if we've already got it, and then and taking action. We have to take action. So a lot of times we make a resolution like, I'm gonna lose some weight this year. But we don't make any plans for that. We don't figure out how we're going to do that. We just think, we just kind of throw it out there to the universe, a statement. But so with an intention, the best thing is to know exactly what you want. Exactly. Be very clear. Instead of I'm going to lose weight this year, I want to lose 8 pounds or 18 pounds or whatever it is exactly that you want. And then you need to visualize that desired result before it ever happens. And then you expect it to happen. And lastly, you take action, meaning you make a plan. How are you going to do that? And you figure, you have that in worked out for yourself. So intention is that magical combination of will, motivation, and desire, and then action. But he always says, too, to include gratitude into that as to what you already have. Be sure to be grateful for that. And when you do set an intention, ask this or something better.
God, I love that. That sounds a bit a bit of the law of attraction is thrown in there, right? With the whole visualizing and kind of imagining that.
It is. Yeah. It is, definitely. It's just sometimes they leave out the action part. Like sometimes people think they can set the intention, visualize it, and expect it to happen, but not really do anything about it except throw that thought out into the universe. And that maybe for some people that works. I know that there has been that thought in The Secret, but I think the magic thing is actually doing
about it. That was my main gripe with The Secret. I didn't like the way it was sold to people.
Right. I agree with you. Yeah.
It's not so simple, like the way they make it sound.
You know? No, it's not. And if you, the thing, what happens if things don't happen for you the way you're hoping, you think you're doing something wrong.
Exactly.
Then you're like, oh, I haven't set those intentions enough. I wasn't as powerful as I should have been in my thoughts. I wasn't clear. Oh no, I thought something negative for a minute. It all messed up. So you do all that, but then you have to, you know, I mean, I can sit on my couch all day and visualize clients coming to me and picturing all that's happening. But if I don't get out there and kind of introduce myself or talk to people or market myself somehow, no one's going to find me.
Yeah. And you also don't want to get into hyper intention mode, right? Hyper intention, you're just... because then you get into this, into fear, you veer into the territory of fear and desperation, and you're just
exactly
on an energetic level. You're just gonna, I don't know. It's not gonna attract what you want. In fact, it's gonna do quite the opposite.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that there's a fine line there between, you know, with the fear and the desperation aspect of that.
Yeah, so I think an added element would be surrendering. Think about it and then kind of surrender it while you take action. I think it's really a balancing act.
It is, because, you know, they say having expectations, like setting an expectation and expecting exactly that expectation to happen is what leads us to disappointment. So that's why I like the idea of asking for this is what I would like. Something better, but being open to what you might receive.
Yeah, but they've got to really mean it when they say it. That's where the trick.
Yeah, is. Yeah, that's true. That you really do. That's what intention is. Intention, you know, that's the difference. I think of an intention, or just a resolution or a want or something. Intention is really a strong desire.
Right.
And the action after that to make sure it happens, or to, you know, something similar to happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. That brings us to the end of our conversation. Kim, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, you too, Celine. Thank you so much for having me on. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah. I appreciate you being here and sharing your wisdom with my listeners.
And the next time you come out to California, you make sure you get a hold of me and I'll show you Santa Barbara.
Oh, thank you. And before you go, could you please let everyone know where they can learn more about you and your services?
Sure. I have a website. It's www.wabisabiwomen.com. And let's see, where else? I do have a feng shui Facebook page, but I can't think of the link, but I can provide that for you. It's Wabi Sabi. So, you know, Wabi Sabi is the Japanese philosophy of imperfection, finding beauty in all things imperfect, incomplete, impermanent. So that's my, it's Wabi, like W-A-B-I. And then Sabi, S-A-B-I, Wabi Sabi Women.
Okay.
Some people can confuse it with wasabi, Japanese horseradish, but it's not. It's a different word. So anyway, that's my website. That,
beautiful meaning.
Find out more about. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you so much, Kim. I hope that you have a lovely day.
You too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed what you just heard, please subscribe to my podcast and feel free to share it with your friends and family. Take care and speak soon.